Part 2, Chapter 8. When Lindy woke up, she found the splinter cat sitting beside her washing himself. "Goodness," she said, "did I sleep for very long?"
"Not too long," replied the cat, licking his paw.
"How do you feel, Miss Lindy?"
"I feel fine, but I think I ought to be getting home. My brothers might find out that I'm gone and be worried."
The cat sprang up.
"Ah, Miss Lindy, I have a tremendous favor to ask you. I wonder if you would help me with this."
He produced a large ball of wool.
"Every friend that comes to visit makes a cat's cradle with me. I add it to my house. It's like signing my guest's book."
Lindy frowned. "All right, but please let's hurry." She was beginning to feel a little bit annoyed.
"What do I have to do?"
The splinter cat worked the wool quickly between his paws until it made a pattern of cross threads.
"Now, Miss Lindy, use the finger and thumb of each hand and pick up the wool in the middle."
Lindy did as she was told, and the cat transferred the threads to her hands.
"Perfect," breathed the splinter cat.
He lifted a paw to take up the wool again. Somehow, the threads slipped, and Lindy found her hands bound by the brightly colored strands.
"Oh, dear!"
The cat blinked in alarm.
"It slipped out of my grasp."
"Hold on, dear friend. Let me unwind you." He turned Lindy around. "I think the wool goes under here and through here." Lindy began to feel dizzy, for the cat passed the ball of wool under her arms and around her waist, and then over her hands so quickly that she hadn't time to follow his movements. The results were disastrous. For the time the cat had finished, she was so tangled up in the wool that she couldn't move.
"What have you done?" she said in an angry voice.
"I told you, I wanted to go home.
It's terribly late, and you promised we would be back in an hour."
"Well, well, well, how goes it?" said a familiar voice, and Lindy felt a chill run up her spine. The proc's tall frame filled the doorway. The splinter cat cast a quick look towards Lindy.
"Good heavens, splinter cat, what have you been up to?"
The proc began to laugh. The cat chuckled.
Lindy had seen and heard enough to know that she was in terrible trouble.
She glared at the proc. "I know what you're doing," she said, trying desperately not to cry.
"You just stop all this and let me go. The professor is going to be furious with you when he finds out."
"He already knows, my dear," the proc replied casually. "And I've told him that if he wants you back, then he must stop trying to reach the Wang Doodle. If he agrees, you may go home at once."
"What if he doesn't agree?"
"Well, that's a problem we'll have to face when the time comes." He turned back to the splinter cat.
"Keep her here. I'll be in touch. I've got to push on to the palace."
"Is the Wang Doodle very upset?" the splinter cat asked.
"He's beside himself," replied the proc. "He believes this is all my fault, and he's keeping me twice as busy just because he's cross."
The cat shook his head sympathetically. "Don't worry, proc. It'll be over soon."
"Yes, thank goodness." The proc raised a hand in farewell.
"Goodbye, Miss Lindy. I apologize for the inconvenience, but I have no alternative."
Lindy turned her head away and didn't answer. When she looked back again, the proc had gone. The splinter cat stretched and yawned. Oh my, let's... Going... Oh, sorry. Oh my, it's going to be a long day. How about some watch, Miss Lindy? Don't talk to me, she snapped. You false friend. If I had my way, you'd lose all the rest of your 8 lives right now. The splinter cat winced, but he said simply, just as you please. He stretched back on the pillow, idly stroking the geometric pieces of wool above his head. Rippling notes of music came from the taut strings, and Lindy watched with surprise as the splinter cat played on the wall of his house as though it were a harp. Her thoughts turned to the professor and Thomas and Benjamin. She knew how worried they must be. What would the professor do in a situation like this? Would he give in to the proc, or would he try to rescue her? Lindy thought that the boys would encourage such a move, but if they did try to find her, how would they know where she was? Suddenly, she had an idea. It wasn't a very good one, but it was the best she could come up with. She began to sing a song to the splinter cat's music. The creature looked startled, but he smiled happily, and to Lindy's great relief, continued to play. Ben and Tom and the professor had been searching for hours, but there was still no sign of Lindy. Suddenly, Tom noticed something on the horizon. He studied it for a moment. Then he shouted, Professor, look! It's the Wiffle Bird! They watched as the Wiffle Bird flew straight to them and settled on Tom's shoulder. He patted the beautiful feathers and said, I knew you'd turn up sooner or later. We're in a terrible fix. Wiffle Bird, we can't find Lindy, and we simply must reach her somehow. The bird made sympathetic noises and preened herself. At that moment, an eerie sound echoed across the plateau. It was a dreadful noise, mournful and lonely, a wailing, sobbing cry that moved up and down the scale and went echoing around the mountain. What on earth was that? Ben spoke in a hushed voice. The professor held up a hand. Listen, there it goes again. Tom frowned. Then he said tentatively, I may be imagining things, but I think I hear something else. Another sound underneath. Do you know what I mean, Professor? The professor looked at the boy sharply. Are you sure, Tom? Tom listened carefully. Yes, yes. Do you know what it is? He cried. It's Lindy. I can hear Lindy singing. Hi. Where, Tom? Where is it coming from? The boy strained to pick out the tiny, fragile sound from along the shifting echoes. Then, for a moment, the wailing stopped, and in the silence, Lindy's voice came through clearly. That way, Tom yelled, pointing. That's where she is. No one was prepared for what happened next. The Wiffle Bird suddenly shot up into the air. Mayday! She shrieked, and then again, Mayday! The professor looked up and saw a huge shadow coming towards them. Look out, he cried. Grabbing both boys, he shoved them to safety under the nearest tree. Seconds later, a whirling wind like a hurricane flattened them to the ground. What is it? Gasped Ben in panic. Guy's cactus, coughed the professor, as the dust swirled about them. The huge shadow passed overhead again, and the boys caught a glimpse of a colossal wing with large, ragged feathers. Black talons scraped the earth as the monster above them banked to avoid the tree, and the swirling air engulfed them.
"Where's the Wiffle Bird?"
Tom looked for her anxiously. She squawked indignantly from the branches above his head. The professor and the boys waited a full 5 minutes before coming out from under the tree. To their relief, the giant bird was nowhere in sight. The professor wiped his brow with his spotted handkerchief.
"Good Lord, that was close. We were lucky, very lucky indeed."
Ben was badly shaken. "Do you think the geese cactus saw us?"
"I doubt it. It would surely have attacked us, for it's a dumb creature that acts first and thinks later. You know, had it wanted to, it could easily have picked up the whole tree."
Tom said fervently,
"Well, I sure hope we don't run into it again."
The professor scrutinized the sky with the mountains and the mountains. "I think we're safe now. Let's hurry and get Lindy and ourselves out of this mess." He set off in a westerly direction, the boys falling into step behind them, beside them. The Wiffle Bird shook herself, then flew ahead as if leading the way. The Splinter Cat had been howling ever since Lindy completed her first song. In the beginning, he had played the accompaniment for her, overjoyed at the sweet music they were making together. But as the song progressed and Lindy's clear voice sang the melody to perfection, the cat's amber eyes filled with tears. He continued to play, and every once in a while drew a paw across his face and sighed deeply. When the song was over, he said, with feeling, "Oh, Miss Lindy, you sing so sweetly."
"Thank you. It's because you play so well," replied Lindy. Seeing that the cat was flattered, she added, "Let's do some more. This is fun."
The cat took up the accompaniment once again, and Lindy put all the expression she could into her voice. The Splinter Cat began to blink furiously, and suddenly he could control his feelings no longer. He rolled back his head and howled. Lindy quickly realized that the howling was much louder than her voice and would carry twice as far. If the professor and the boys were anywhere in the vicinity, they would certainly hear it. She continued to sing. "Oh, Miss Lindy," the cat bawled, "stop. I can't stand it. That's so pretty." His back leg drummed the floor in ecstasy, and his fluffy tail waved rhythmically back and forth. "Please play something else," coaxed Lindy. "I'm having such a good time." The Splinter Cat hiccuped and wiped his nose. He began to strum another melody, but when Lindy joined in, the strain became too great and he broke down completely. "Stop! Stop! Stop! Stop!" he sobbed and rolled on the floor, covering his head with his paws. Lindy took a deep breath and wondered how much longer she could keep this up. She almost choked with surprise as the professor's head came into view over the threshold. He cautiously peered into the room, saw her, and put a finger to his lips, then ducked out of sight. The professor ran back to the bushes where the boys were hiding. She's in there, all right, he puffed excitedly. Now the question is, how are we going to get her out? He had no sooner uttered the words than the wiffle bird, who had been sitting quietly in a nearby tree, flew to the ground, landing a foot or so from the Splinter Cat's pad. She squawked horribly and lay there still. "What's the matter with her?" Tom asked anxiously. "Hush," said the professor sharply. "The howling of the Splinter Cat has stopped." In the silence, the wiffle bird squawked again, as if in great pain. The Splinter Cat's startled head popped through the strands of wool, his ember eyes red with emotion and tears. The cat looked around quickly and saw the apparently helpless wiffle bird lying on the ground. His ears perked up, his eyes opened wide, and then became gleaming, calculating slits. He disappeared. "Professor," whispered Tom, "we've got to do something. The wiffle bird's in trouble." "Tom, wait. Wait, Tom." The professor laid a restraining hand on Tom's arm. The Splinter Cat came out of his office, or his house, his belly pressed flat to the tree. The wiffle bird fluttered in panic and rolled a few feet away. She began to emit a series of agonizing squeaks and gasps. The Splinter Cat eased his way through the tree, ears flattened, a wicked grin on his face. Then he pulled himself forward, one paw at a time, until he was within a few feet of the wiffle bird. Ben held his breath. Tom, horror-stricken, tugged at the professor's sleeve, but the professor again signaled for the boy to wait. The Splinter Cat's body tensed, and his high behind began to move from side to side. With a mighty leap, he sprang for the wiffle bird. She rocketed into the air, evading the grasping claws by mere inches. Beautiful feathers flew in all directions. She landed a little way from the cat and dragged herself along the ground. The cat looked surprised and pounced again. Once more, the wiffle bird took to the air. She flapped around and around in low circles, and the cat's head twisted wildly, his neck a terrible corkscrew. The professor took a small penknife out of his pocket. "I'm going to get Lindy. Wait for me here and don't move." The Splinter Cat had been lured a considerable distance from the tree. The professor waited until the cat had his back to him, and then, quickly and silently, he ran to the ladder and climbed it. Lindy was overwhelmed with relief when she saw him. The professor quickly cut her loose. "Stay close to me, and when I tell you, run as fast as you can." As the professor and Lindy climbed down the ladder, they glimpsed the Splinter Cat thrashing wildly in the air and the wiffle bird spinning and rolling and tumbling in all directions. While the cat struggled to recover both balance and sense, Lindy and the professor ran to the bushes where the boys were hiding. The children embraced each other silently. "Now what do we do?" whispered Ben. "We wait to see if the wiffle bird is going to be all right. Then we get out of here." By some miracle, the wiffle bird had evaded all attempts at capture. The cat, obsessed with the desire to catch this annoying and elusive bird, made a last flying leap, jaw snapping, teeth tearing, yowling snarling and slashing the air with his claws. The Whiffle bird shot up into the air and shrieked, "Get to the point!" The Splinter Cat crashed to the ground. "Get to the point! The point! The point!" The professor looked around in desperation. "That's where she means. That point up there." He indicated a needle-sharp rock at the top of the hill. "Run, children, run for your lives." He grabbed Lindy's hand and began the steep ascent, scrambling over rocks and stones. The boys followed. The Whiffle bird flew above them and shrieked again, "Get to the point!" Dazed and completely frustrated, the Splinter Cat picked himself up and looked around. All his vision cleared, he saw the children and the professor. With a demented howl, he shrieked forward toward them. He streaked forward toward them, legs churning, his powerful thigh behind propelling him up the hill in great leaps and bounds. "Don't look back," the professor yelled. He put on a burst of speed, and Lindy, who still clung to his hand, felt herself momentarily lifted off the ground. They were almost at the top of the hill, but the Splinter Cat was horribly close. Ben felt the ground shaking, and he heard the cat panting behind them with murderous fury. With a last mighty effort, the creature sprang. "Got you, got you, got you!" he roared triumphantly. His huge paws spread wide, the wicked-looking claws slashing like steel knives in the sun. The professor grasped the narrow rock and swung around, pressing himself and Lindy flat against the rogue stone. The boys flung themselves to the ground, and the cat sailed over their heads, a crazed, fearful look on his face. "Oh, whoa, oh, ooh, yow!" he shrieked, his back legs trying desperately to break his tremendous speed, but it was too late. On the other side of the rock, the hill fell away sharply, and the Splinter Cat sailed over the edge and landed on the steep incline. His long black back legs pushed him forward and upward and over, and he rolled and bumped and crashed from side to side. Trying desperately to gain a foothold, great furrows of earth appeared as he dug in his heels. Billowing clouds of dust rose behind him as he plunged at the top of the hill. He tumbled into a field of bright mustard yellow flowers and completely disappeared. The professor began to chuckle. Relief and exhaustion flooded over him. "It's a well-known fact," he explained, "that Splinter Cats with their high behinds are very good at climbing up hills, but they're very bad at going down." Good old Whifflebird, he knew that she was going to be when she told us to get to the point. "I can't help feeling sorry for the Splinter Cat," said Lindy. "Don't, my dear. If I'm not mistaken, our furry friend just landed in a field of catnip. He should be ecstatic for quite some time." "What's ecstatic?" she said. Suddenly, with a squeal of happiness, the Splinter Cat exploded out of the flowers.
He did a double somersault and landed on the blossom again. His head popped up with one of the blossom, climbed between his teeth. There was an intoxicated, happy grin on his face, and he began to leap about as if dizzy and delirious. Oh, yee! Oh! The children and the professor watched as he yelled and bounced. Stop! Stop it! I like it! He rolled on his back, kicking his legs in the air. Oh, ha ha ha! Sweet! Sibilant! Splinter cat! He howled with laughter, as though he were being tickled unmercifully. The children began to giggle as well. Help, help! I love it, I love it, I love it! They heard the cat mumble passionately as he went tearing off around the field, tumbling and turning, sniffling and sneezing, twittering and fluttering in an absolute dither of delight. That, Lindy, said the professor, is a perfect example of the word ecstatic.